Okay, so we are studying in 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles together, and we've been studying about the reign of Ahaziah, who was the son of Jehoram, grandson of Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah. So we've, the last couple of weeks, been looking more at the kings of Judah to catch up to where we are as it ties into the events that we've been studying about in our recent time of what's been going on in the northern kingdom of Israel with Ahab and then with his sons who succeeded him, first Ahaziah and then his son Jehoram, who is currently the king over Israel, the northern kingdom, at this point in our study. And we now have had a Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, so we had two Jehorams that overlapped somewhat, and that Jehoram, the king of Judah, did not have he reigned for 8 years, and then he died that gruesome death by the Lord's punishment with that disease in his bowels. That he was smitten with because he walked after the ways of the house of Ahab because he had married Ahab's daughter Athaliah. And then he was succeeded by his youngest son Ahaziah succeeded by his youngest son because all of his other sons, the older ones, were all put to death by those Arabians that the Lord sent against him as part of the punishments that the Lord had promised in destroying him and his family because of his wickedness, that is Jehoram's wickedness. But the Lord did preserve his youngest son Ahaziah to be able to sit on the throne of Judah for David's sake, as he preserved that throne there, even though Ahaziah, who succeeded his father Jehoram, being the daughter of the son of Athaliah, the daughter of Ahab, he is identified in the description his identification is with the family of the northern kingdom of Israel, with the house of Omri, because spiritually that's what he walked after their ways. And as we were reading in 2 Chronicles chapter 22, in verses 1 through 5, he walked after their counsel. His mother was his counselor to do wickedly. It told us in 2 Chronicles 22, verse 3. And the house of Ahab, the rest of the family, were his counselors after the death of his father to his destruction. It told us in 2 Chronicles 22, verse 4. Then in verse 5, the last verse that we read in 2 Chronicles 22, it says he walked also after their counsel. So he was doing as he had been taught to do, and it's very astounding to see, and astounding in a very negative way, of course, to see this descendant of David, and David, a man who was after God's own heart, and even more recently, Ahaziah's grandfather was Jehoshaphat, who walked in the Lord's ways all of his days, and Jehoshaphat's father, Ahaziah's great grandfather, Asa, also walked in the Lord's ways. So he had many examples and influences going back to David, but then right through now to his more recent ancestry until. His father had married into the house of Ahab and walked after those ways, but he chose not to follow the ways of his father's household through being of the tribe of Judah, descendant of David. Instead of walking after righteousness, he chose to walk after the ways of the family that was his mother's family, of the house of Ahab and Omri in Israel. So that's really who he's identified with. That's the ways that he's walked in. They were the ones counseling him to do that. Were there any counselors to counterbalance that or to try to thwart those evil influences there. There's really not, because with Ahaziah's own father having learned those ways, I mean, who around him was saying, no, don't follow after the ways of this house of Ahab? There's really not much next to him. We don't see the good influences. I mean, his father Jehoram chose to follow the ways of his wife's family, but he had his father there to learn from. Well, Ahaziah doesn't have that blessing, and so we see the influence on him is primarily for evil, and they're all in there together counseling him, teaching him these ways of wickedness and to not follow the Lord. And we can see the outcome there, that he walked in those wicked ways. Well, the next thing it tells us about him concerning how his death came, because he only reigned for 1 year. So his reign is going to be very brief, and the Lord's going to bring an end to Ahaziah's reign. At the same time, he's going to bring an end to the reign of Jehoram, Ahab's son. They're going to die, those two kings, Ahaziah, king of Judah, and Jehoram, Ahaziah's uncle, who's king of Israel, Ahab's son, they're going to die together at the hand of Jehu, the son of Nimshi, the one that the Lord chose and appointed and will have anointed to be the next king of Israel, to carry out and to be his instrument of destruction on the house of Ahab. The Lord's going to command him to do that. Jehu's going to do so. But then he himself is going to continue to walk after the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. So he's going to not repent of that. So even Jehu, even though he did the Lord's work in destroying Ahab's family, we're going to see that he does not follow God. And he himself was not a righteous man. That's what's coming up next in our study, but we want to look here at the rest of 2 Chronicles chapter 22 that tells about the end of Ahaziah. So it's really looking at here in 2 Chronicles 22 those events from the perspective of how it brought an end to this the reign of this king of Judah. Then after that, we want to go back over to the book of 2 Kings and read about it, where the perspective is going to be, or the emphasis is going to be, as it ties into the destruction of the house of Ahab, Jehoram, Ahab's son, and all those others there in Israel. But of course, Ahaziah is very much affected by this, and he's part of the family too. So in 2 Chronicles chapter 22, getting back to our study here concerning Ahaziah, the king of Judah, it says in verse 5, he walked also after their counsel, that is, after the counsel of those family members of his that were of the house of Ahab. And it says, and went with Jehoram, the son of Ahab, king of Israel, to war against Hazael, king of Syria, at Ramoth-Gilead. And the Syrians smote Joram. All right, well, this is very similar to what happened at what brought about the death of Ahab himself, Ahaziah's other grandfather. So Ahaziah's two grandfathers had gone and fought together at Ramoth-Gilead. We remember studying about that in 1 Kings 22 and then in 2 Chronicles 18. Both of those chapters record those events. And just to refresh on that, when Jehoshaphat married his son to Ahab's daughter, Jehoram, to Athaliah, that was done as a gesture to make peace and a treaty with Ahab. And so they made that marriage and they united their families. And so then Ahab asked Jehoshaphat then, as they are now allied together, asked for his help, his assistance, to go to Ramoth in Gilead. Now, Gilead was that part of that region on the east side of the Jordan River. If we had a map of Israel here, if you can picture that, Israel basically running lengthwise more of a north-south oriented territory, narrower from east to west. But the Jordan River bisected that land that God gave to the children of Israel. And on the east side, there was the land of Bashan and Gilead, those areas that had been ruled by the Amorite kings Sihon and Og, that were utterly destroyed by the Israelites when they came up on that into that area under Moses, and they conquered that land. And then Reuben and Gad and half the tribe of Manasseh that were rich in cattle had asked for that land to be divided among them for their inheritance. And the Lord granted that with the condition that they fight with their brethren in crossing the river, which they then did, crossing Jordan under Joshua. And they, once the entire land was conquered, then all would fight together, and then all would inherit together at the same time. And so that would, they would be given that territory on the east side of Jordan for their inheritance, but only after they helped their brethren and all the land was conquered together. And that was done. But then Gilead, being on the east side of the Jordan River and to the, on the north end of that territory there that Israel inherited, it bordered the nation of Syria. So when the kings of the north had turned away from God and were not obeying his commandments, God fulfilled his promise that he would curse them with defeat at the hands of their enemies. So their enemies started to come against them, started to encroach on their territory and to take land and cities away from them. And so that was what happened. And so the fact that the Syrians had gone into Gilead and were taking cities like Ramoth away from Israel, that was from God. That was God's hand at work in fulfillment of what he had promised he would do to curse them when they turned away from him, which they had done. And so there was no mystery or surprise, or shouldn't have been to anybody that read God's word, as to what the real cause of that problem was that they had with the Syrians. The Syrians were causing great difficulty for Ahab, really, all of his days, and then now his with his successors, with his sons Ahaziah and Jehoram. Of course, we also have read now there was a change in rulership in Syria itself. Ben-Hadad, who had been reigning on the throne there, God had sent, going back to 1 Kings chapter 19, verses 15 through 17 that we read before, God had spoken to Elijah when he was on the run from Ahab and Jezebel, and he had gone out into the wilderness there, out to Sinai, where God had given his law, and he was hiding out there thinking he was the only one left. And of course, the Lord said that he had preserved 7,000 in Israel who had not yet bowed their knees to Baal. But at that time, he instructed Elijah and told him there were going to be three people that he was going to anoint for different offices. One would be Elisha, that was going to become the prophet in his room, which Elijah did. That was the first one, and actually the only one that he carried out personally. And then the other two were to anoint Hazael to be king over Syria instead of Ben-Hadad, which Elisha did, that we read about. And then lastly, Jehu, the son of Nimshi, to be the next king of Israel, which would then involve his destroying the house of Ahab. And that's what's about to happen now. Elijah ended up not being the one to carry that out because, as we know, there was a change in God's plans as far as the timing of the events. He still brought it all to pass, as he said, but he did delay the destruction of Ahab's house because when Ahab heard all those prophecies, at least for that moment, he went walked softly and humbled himself. He didn't repent and turn to God, but he did humble himself and go softly when that prophecy came upon him. And so God made the decision. He rewarded that by stating he was going to delay those events until after Ahab's death and bring it to pass in his son's days. So consequently, then Elijah was taken up by God in the whirlwind before he completed those tasks that God had originally given to him. And so they were finished by Elisha, who anointed Hazael, but he's going to now be the one he's going to be the one instrumental in having Jehu anointed to be the next king of Israel. But Hazael is now the king of Syria, but has been Hadad, had caused so much trouble for Ahab. Even at the time when Elisha anointed Hazael, his countenance was sad that Hazael noticed, and he was weeping about knowing the trouble that Hazael was going to bring upon the Israelites, God's people. Even though it was God's punishment of Israel for their wickedness, was that something that made Elisha happy to know how they were going to, many of them were going to suffer and die at the hands of Hazael and the Syrians? No, it did not at all. I mean, he was not rejoicing at the fall of those wicked ones. Does God have pleasure in the death of the wicked? He doesn't. But it is his will to bring that judgment to pass. He's going to bring righteous judgment upon all and bless the ones who do what is good and right in his sight and punish those who don't. But it doesn't please him to lose souls. And Elisha grieved about what he knew was going to happen. And so the Syrians are continuing under Hazael to cause these problems for Israel, because this was God's punishment of their wickedness that persisted now into Jehoram's days, the son of Ahab. And so they're still, the Syrians still possess Ramoth and Gilead. Ahab had tried to take that away by force, take it back. But going and trying to forcibly take it out of the Syrians and fight the Syrians for it was the wrong approach, because it wasn't the Syrians themselves, even though, of course, they desired and delighted in taking more territory for themselves away from Israel. Israel's problem, Ahab and now Jehoram, their problem wasn't with Syria, per se. Where was the problem? I mean, it was with God. God was the one doing this, using the Syrians to do it. But their problem was with God. And if they wanted to fix the problem that they had with not having Ramoth and Gilead anymore, did they need to get an army ready and go over and fight some more? Or did they need to humble themselves and repent of their wickedness and then turn to God and serve him? If they had done that, what would have happened with their trouble with the Syrians? It would have been done away and God would have blessed them. There was the way that would have succeeded, and that was the only way that would have. But instead of doing that, they're not looking at this like, oh, we've been doing wickedly, God is punishing us, that's why we have this problem. No, they're looking at it strictly in terms of, this nation over here has taken our city, now we want to go take it back. So it failed when Ahab did that, when Jehoshaphat went with him. That's when there was that lying spirit in the mouth of Ahab's prophets that persuaded him to go up to Ramoth and Gilead so that he could fall there by God's plan. Ahab listened to the lies, and Micaiah, God's prophet, revealed how all of that came to pass. Well, he was struck for what he said, which was all truth, and he prophesied that Ahab was going to fall there at Ramoth-Gilead. Well, Ahab then disguised himself in the battle, but he went, and Jehoshaphat went with him. And Ahab was mortally wounded in that battle, and he died in his chariot there. An arrow hit there in the joint of his armor, just in the right spot. How did that happen? Of course, that was God doing that. And he spared and saved Jehoshaphat at that time, even though he shouldn't have been there. But God showed mercy to Jehoshaphat and spared him. But Ahab died, and then they took his chariot back to where? To Jezreel. And they washed his chariot out there in Jezreel, and the dogs licked up Ahab's blood there. Why was it there in that location where the chariot was cleaned out and that dogs licked up Ahab's blood on that very spot? Because that was the plot of ground that had been Naboth's vineyard that Ahab had taken from Naboth when Jezebel had had Naboth to be falsely accused of blaspheming God and the king and then was stoned to death, and he bled and died on that spot. And so God avenged his blood in that manner, just like he said through Elijah the prophet he would. So all of that came to pass. But Israel lost that battle. So who still possesses Ramoth and Gilead? Syria. Well, now Jehoram, Ahab's son, is going to try to go take it back. And he's going to take with him Jehoshaphat's grandson, who is his nephew, to go and try to fight again another battle there to take it back. Well, is this going to go any better than the first time? No, for the same reason. But in this case, whereas the first time Ahab was mortally wounded and died, Jehoram is going to be wounded, and even though he's going to survive and come back to where? To Jezreel. That's going to lead to Jehu seeking him out and Ahaziah being present there to visit his uncle recovering from his wounds. And that's going to lead to Jehu's move against Jehoram and murdering the king. Well, it was really God's commandment. So from that standpoint, killing the king of Israel was something God told Jehu to do as punishment. But when he also did kill Ahaziah at the same time. When we look at that, then we can consider, was that within the bounds of the parameters of what God instructed Jehu to do, or did he step outside of those boundaries of what God commanded him to do, and did he then take an unauthorized action against Ahaziah? So that's an interesting question that we have some words from God, which is where we have to get the answer. If there's going to be an answer, that's the only place we can go, is the Word of God, to the Word of God, and it will be there. So we want to look at that here in a moment, Lord willing. But in 2 Chronicles 22, verse 5, it tells us that's what Ahaziah was doing there, and went with Jehoram, the son of Ahab, king of Israel, to war against Hazael, king of Syria, at Ramoth-Gilead. And who prevailed? The Syrians again. So the Syrians smote Joram. Ahaziah's choice to go and be there with his uncle in that battle, was it whose counsel? Well, the rest of his family. I mean, they're all telling him, you need to go help your uncle. And he does. I mean, he's of the same family. He's not looking at this like, well, I shouldn't be going up there. What happened when my grandfather went there? He's not thinking about all of that. He's being counseled by his family, his mother, and the rest of his or her family to go and do this. And so he goes and does that. In that battle, he is spared, but his uncle, Jehoram, the king of Israel, is wounded there. So verse 6, back in 2 Chronicles 22, verse 6, it says, and he returned to be healed. And this is speaking of Joram. That's the last one that is mentioned in verse 5. So he refers to Joram there in verse 6, returned to be healed in Jezreel. Familiar name? Yes, that's where Ahab had his blood licked up by the dogs after he fell in battle at Ramoth and Gilead. Joram didn't learn anything, did he? So he went to the very place that his father, where his father was mortally wounded was trying to do the same thing that his father had done and failed, and now he's failed and gets wounded there too. And so he goes to be healed in the place where the dogs had licked up his father's blood, in that very place where that had been Naboth's, that had been taken from Naboth. So that ties in here too. So he returned to be healed in Jezreel because of the wounds which were given him at Ramah when he fought with Hazael, king of Syria. And Azariah, the son of Jehoram, king of Judah, went down to see Jehoram, the son of Ahab, at Jezreel because he was sick. And the destruction of Ahaziah was of God by coming to Joram. For when he was come, he went out with Jehoram against Jehu, the son of Nimshi, whom the Lord had anointed to cut off the house of Ahab. And it came to pass that when Jehu was executing judgment upon the house of Ahab and found the princes of Judah and the sons of the brethren of Ahaziah that ministered to Ahaziah, he slew them. And he sought Ahaziah, and they caught him, for he was hid in Samaria, and brought him to Jehu. And when they had slain him, they buried him, because, said they, he is the son of Jehoshaphat, who sought the Lord with all his heart. So the house of Ahaziah had no power to keep still the kingdom. And so that's the end of Ahaziah and how his reign came to an end. And then his mother, Athaliah, is going to take control of the kingdom of Judah and is going to hold a sway and control the kingdom of Judah for the next 6 years, which is what verse 10 in 2 Chronicles 22 is starting to describe. But we'll save that that point and what happens after Ahaziah's death, which will also be after Jehoram's death in Israel, and see what happens. Those are events that will directly affect what happens in Judah, but we'll save that until after we go through everything that Jehu did in executing God's vengeance on the house of Ahab. And this will actually be the first time since Solomon's death, when Rehoboam and Jeroboam began their reigns at the same time, we're going to have a change in the kings, in the rulers of the kingdoms of Israel and Judah at the same time, for the first time since that original split, because both the kings are going to die at the same time. So that's the end of what happened to Ahaziah. But we can see there in what led to it. After that battle, Jehoram is wounded there, and then when Jehoram goes to Jezreel to be healed of his wounds, Ahaziah goes there to visit his uncle who was sick. And whose will was it that Ahaziah was going to be killed at this time and at this place? Who was working this? It says it was of God. And of course, anybody's life and death is of God. And we need to understand that. So when he's saying that this was of God, he's pointing out that who was in control here. But we need to be understand that's the case in all things. God does work all things after the counsel of his own will, Ephesians 1:11. And we all know from what we're instructed in James chapter 4, should we go to a place and say, I'm going to go here and into such a city, and I'm going to stay there for a year and buy and sell and get gain. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. That's not the way we should speak. What should we say? We ought to say, if the Lord will, we will live. Or do this or that. He doesn't say if we should say if the Lord wills, we will be able to go to that city or do whatever. We should say that too. But he starts it off by saying, if the Lord wills, we will live. It's only in that word thelo there, that Greek word is thelo, which means to determine. God has to make the determination and the decision to give us life to begin with. I mean, can we give life to ourselves? I mean, we didn't create ourselves. God had to make a decision. He was going to create us. And like he breathed into Adam's nostrils the breath of life and Adam became a living soul, God created us. He made the decision that we would exist and made us and gave us life and put us here. All that was of God. So the beginning was of God, and it couldn't have happened without him. And our end is not going to happen without him, whenever that is, for whatever reason and how and all of that. It's ultimately going to be of God. Our breath is in his hands. We couldn't will ourselves into existence to start with. Can we will ourselves in maintaining the existence that God has given to us? Can we keep ourselves alive? No, we can't. Now, does God give us opportunities and things and choices that we can make that could impact what he decides to do with us in terms of when he might take us from this earth? Certainly. It's not that we don't have any role in it in terms of God responding to the choices that we make. I mean, the lot is cast in the lap. We have to make our decisions about what to do with the lot, but then who disposes of that brings about whatever the disposition of the consequences for the choices we make when God gives us the lots, the choices, the decisions to make. Well, he's going to be the one to bring all that about. But so we're going to have involvement in it with decisions we make, but ultimately the decision is God's. And it's only by his determination that we will live another moment. We should all be aware of that. But he's pointing out here that that what happened with Ahaziah, this isn't bad luck, which is the kind of language that people tend to use about things. Well, it's just bad luck. Ahaziah just happened to be there when Jehu shows up. Well, no, it wasn't. Ahaziah made a decision to go up there and visit his uncle, but who was behind all of that? And who was the one that directed and made all this to work? I mean, we see decisions being made by several people, but all of the decisions that different individuals are making, God's the one that's making it all come to pass at this time in this manner, because people, as James 4 is telling us, I mean, how many plans do people make that don't get carried out the way they intend for them to? Well, if you ever want proof of that, I mean, just make out your to-do list, and make your to-do list out for, okay, here's my to-do list for, and make it out for the next few days, what you're planning to do, what you're going to do on what days. And, several of those things, many of those things might get done. It's not that we shouldn't plan and prepare things. We could look at lots of scriptures about that. We're supposed to plan things, but we need to recognize that what our plans may be to do things, of course, we need to be planning good. I mean, we're to consider one another to provoke to love and good works, just for an example. We're supposed to give thought, consideration to that before it happens. So there's a planning. Okay, I want to encourage today. We need to be thinking about each other. I want to encourage and edify and provoke, and we should have each other specifically in mind in that. But the plans that we have to do good, does everything go like we plan for it to? I mean, just make your list out, and we see that, and I think we all know that from experience, but some things might go the way we plan, but a whole bunch doesn't. And there are lots of things that happen that we don't even think about. And that's every day. So we know God's working, and he's working in all things. And that's why we have to say if it's his will, then these things that we're planning or considering may come to pass, but only then, only if it's his will. And that begins with our very existence, our lives. And so such was the case here with Ahaziah. This was of God that he would be destroyed by coming to Jehoram there. He was going to himself be part of the destruction of the house of Ahab that God was bringing in. When he was there visiting his uncle is when Jehu, the son of Nimshi, arrived, whom the Lord anointed to cut off the house of Ahab, which is we'll see in detail, in particularly in 2 Kings chapters 9 and 10. But we have a lot more detail in there of that. But God did anoint him to do that. We already read that in 1 Kings 19, 15 through 17, back in Elijah's time when God told Elijah to anoint Jehu, the son of Nimshi, to be the next king of Israel. This was something God had planned, and then he brings it to pass. And even though the timing of it was delayed, as we mentioned, because of what Ahab had done in going softly when he heard those prophecies, but nevertheless, God still fulfilled all of it like he planned, using the one, the instrument that he had planned to use, Jehu. And so God had anointed him, Jehu, to cut off the house of Ahab. And so when Jehu was executing judgment upon the house of Ahab, he found Ahaziah there. But notice it says he found the princes of Judah and the sons of the brethren of Ahaziah that ministered to Ahaziah. So it wasn't just Ahaziah. I mean, it was all the ones that were with Ahaziah. Everybody that was there, all of his, what we would see referred to as his court, I mean, his officials that were there, Jehu killed all of them. And then he was looking for Ahaziah, who then fled to Samaria and hid there. He couldn't get back to Judah, but he hid in Samaria. But he was found there and brought to Jehu, and then he killed him. And but he was buried. He was given a burial because of what reason? He was the son of Jehoshaphat. So God was showing honor to his grandfather, who was righteous. In that was Ahaziah himself worthy of this honor? No. We saw what happened to his father Jehoram, and he was buried in dishonor. But God is still mindful of David and Asa and Jehoshaphat, the ones who had served him in righteousness. And God is still giving honor to those. And these words were spoken. It says they said this. So this was known. Jehoshaphat was known to, he was known as a servant of Jehovah, and that he sought him with all of his heart. And everybody knew that. And God preserved that memory and of Jehoshaphat and who he was and how he lived, like he did with his father David, and for good reason. These were ones God wanted to be remembered by his people. There were these, and by us, as part of that great cloud of witnesses that we have to encourage us to run our race with patience and look to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. But Ahaziah had no power to keep still the kingdom. What power do we have to do anything? I mean, if anybody was going to have power, how about the king? I mean, kings have more power than anybody, right? But when it came down to it, where did he get his throne? From God. He didn't give that to himself, just like he didn't give life to himself. And he couldn't keep himself alive, and he could not keep his kingdom alive. How hard did Saul fight to keep his kingdom in his family and away from David? I mean, he devoted from the time that God made that determination that that's the way it was going to be. Saul, we're told that Saul didn't rest a day after that. I mean, he spent the rest of his life. That was his obsession every day for the rest of his life, to try to thwart that, what God had determined his will was going to be, because of Saul's wickedness. And all that Saul did, and all the energy and all with all the power that he had, and all those that assisted him, how successful was he to preserve his kingdom? None. And we look at what Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, did with all of his plans, devising an entire new religion for his people, to try to keep them away from going to Jerusalem, because he thought in his mind that that would cause them to go follow Rehoboam. And he was devising all of that as his effort to keep his throne and preserve it. How well did that succeed? What if God is determined to do something, what can we do to stop it, to change it? Well, there's only one thing that we can do, and that is to serve him in righteousness and then beseech him. And we can ask him if it's according to his will, and we can make requests to him. And if we're serving him righteously, the Lord may hear and may change. He may change his plans. I mean, he made a change of plans for Ahab, who was wicked, just when he humbled himself one time a little bit. We'll see later on, Lord willing, Hezekiah, and I know we're familiar with that example, when God had determined he was ready to take him, and Hezekiah pled with the Lord, and God gave him 15 more years. So we have examples of that. But other than choosing to serve God, because if we're not serving him and then we're asking him for that, I mean, how inclined is he going to be to hear us? But if we make the decision to serve him with all of our heart and then we ask him for something, then we may persuade him out of his favor for us because we love him and are serving him, he might change his mind. But what power do we have to do anything? We don't. Ahaziah didn't have any power at all, and that was shown very clearly in this. And he failed. So it was God's will for this to happen, and so it did. Now, when we're reading there about what Jehu did in the account in 2 Chronicles 22, for Jehu to slay all of Ahaziah's ministers, his servants, and everybody that was with him there in Jezreel, was that within the bounds of when God said, you go and destroy and bring utter destruction on the house of Ahab? Did that fit in with that? Or did he exceed the boundaries? Did he go past what God authorized him to do? Now, when God tells him, you go and destroy the house of Ahab, when he does it, would God punish him for doing that when he told him to do it? No. Now let's read something that's, and this will be, we're about to run out of time, but if we can turn over to the book of Hosea for a moment and actually read the first five verses of the book of Hosea, you might ask, well, why are we going all the way over to Hosea to read about this? Because he talks about it here. Verse 1, Hosea chapter 1, verse 1, says, the word of the Lord that came unto Hosea, the son of Beeri, in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel. Now, there's going to be a second Jeroboam that's of Jehu's descendants. So this is not long after those days, because this starts in Uzziah, which is Azariah. So he's going to be, this is just within a generation or two of these events that transpired with Jehu's destruction of the house of Ahab. So not a long time afterwards. That's when Hosea was on the earth, and when Hosea began his work that God used him for as his prophet. And so it says here in verse 2, the beginning of the word of the Lord by Hosea, and the Lord said to Hosea, go take unto thee a wife of whoredoms and children of whoredoms, for the land hath committed great whoredom, departing from the Lord. So he went and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, which conceived and bare him a son. And the Lord said unto him, call his name Jezreel, for yet a little while, and I will avenge the blood of Jezreel upon the house of Jehu, and will cause to cease the kingdom of the house of Israel. And it shall come to pass at that day that I will break the bow of Israel in the valley of Jezreel. It's interesting how much judgment God executed in Jezreel over years and generations for different sins there that all tied in originally. That location was where Naboth's vineyard was. If you ever wanted to just do a case study of one event and then the ripples or the effects and how that affected generations of people, how they were visited for those transgressions to the third and fourth generation. If you ever want to see an actual example of that, just look at what happened with Naboth and his vineyard and how that the ripple effects from it and how that echoed through time in different ones and how it all tied back to that event and that location there. We already saw it with Ahab. Of course, he was the one that had took the vineyard, and then his blood was licked up there. But we see that's also the place where Jehoram, Ahab's son, goes after his wounds sustained in at Ramoth and Gilead, and that's where Ahaziah was visiting him, and that's where Jehu, the son of Nimshi, comes and kills those two kings. But also, as we read there in 2 Chronicles 22, killed all of those ones that were with Ahaziah, the king of Judah, there. So God said that he was going and chose Hosea's son's name to be Jezreel. And the reason was because God was going to avenge the blood of Jezreel upon whom? The house of Jehu. Well, the Hosea was prophesying in the days of the house of Jehu, not Jehu himself, but Jeroboam, the son of Joash. I mean, that's Jeroboam the second. Joash and Jeroboam were descendants of Jehu. Part of God's reward for Jehu obeying his commandments to destroy the house of Ahab was that he preserved Jehu's throne to four generations, including these ones named there. But he was going to bring that to an end, his kingdom to an end after that. And he gives a reason here. It was going to be God's destruction of his house ultimately, as to avenge the blood of Jezreel. Well, was God going to avenge? Was he avenging the blood of Jehoram, the son of Ahab, who was killed by Jehu at Jezreel when God told him to do that? No, God wasn't going to avenge on Jehu's family what Jehu did in carrying out what God commanded him to do. This is obviously punishment for something that Jehu did that transgressed God's commandment, what he was not authorized or commanded by God to do. And so God was going to cause his kingdom to end because of this. And he was going to break the bow of Israel in the valley of Jezreel because of what Jehu had done. Well, it wouldn't be for what he had done against Ahab's son or the rest of his family that God told him to do. Was there anything that Jehu did there that was beyond what God had authorized? What about the shedding of the blood of all of these that were servants of Ahaziah, the king of Judah? I mean, were they part of what God had instructed Jehu to do? Or was he going beyond that? He was going beyond what God had commanded. Did it bother him? Obviously not. But he did it. And so there was blood shed there that Jehu was not authorized to shed. Now, what about Ahaziah himself? Well, we know it was of God that Ahaziah would die there. But Ahaziah is the one possessing the throne of Judah. And though he was walked after the ways of Ahab's family, was Jehu supposed to kill? Did God command him to kill Ahaziah? You could say, well, he was a descendant of Ahab, so he should be killed. It's possible that one could get shoehorned in there, but clearly the ones that were helping, that were Ahaziah's officials that were there, were not subject to that punishment, whether or not Ahaziah himself was. But Ahaziah was killed there by Jehu and all the rest of those ones that were with him there. And then God did ultimately avenge that on Jehu's house, because he had shed blood that he shouldn't have. Now, Jehu, God did reward him for executing what God had commanded him to do, but then he brought punishment on him for doing things that God had not commanded him to do. So it's very interesting and instructive to see that line, that distinction that God made with what Jehu was supposed to do, that he did, that he's rewarded for, and that what he should not have done, that he ended up being punished for when God had not commanded him to do it. So when God gives him a license to destroy the house of Ahab, that doesn't give him a license to destroy whomever he wants to, and then whoever might be there in the vicinity of Ahab's family. So he went well beyond what God had commanded there. That will we'll stop there for this morning. Lord willing, next week we want to go back to 2 Kings, and then we want to start our study of chapters 9 and 10. And then later, after all of that's done and we start to read about, when it's time for us to read about Athaliah, then we can come back and try to finish the rest of what's in 2 Chronicles 22 at that time, Lord willing. But we want to go dig into 2 Kings 9 and 10 now and see the after all of this, finally, the destruction of the house of Ahab that Jehu brings, that God commanded him to. So we'll close now, and let's go to our Heavenly Father in prayer again.